sudden, you know, I get pegged to go speak, and I just, I don't know, always amazes me how God works. But sure, grateful to be here, and I'm watching that clock closer than you smokers. I promise you, I got a little watch down here, so I'm not going to go long-winded, but I got some stuff to say. And as always, guys, I'm just pleased. I can't share anywhere. I was talking down in Nashville last week, and I had to say, anytime I share, guys, I'm going to share my experience. My experience may be absolutely different than your experience. One of the things you get to see, especially thanks God for Zooms. I love Zooms. And you get to see so many people out there, and I get to hear, I work for a treatment center. I've had forever. I do clerical work for one of them. And it's amazing to see how many of those little knuckleheads that come through there, and I'm talking to them and visiting with them a little bit, and they're all dejected and feeling, just bummed out. It's, oh, I can't believe y'all are talking about the 12 steps. I tried the 12 steps, it doesn't work. And then I talked to them for a few minutes and find out what they did. It was exactly what I did for 7 years. They went to a lot of meetings, never worked the 12 steps. And so I'm it's part of my story, guys. And I'm not taking a shot at anybody. I just, gosh, if what you're doing out there is working, then keep doing it. If I'm talking to you in here, and you're sitting right next to your sponsor, and I'm saying something that contradicts what he's telling you or she's telling you, I'm wrong and they're right. I'm too old to fight anymore. I don't want to do that. I just it's funny when I get a chance to talk to some folks and they're sitting there, defending their right to do it wrong. It's like, oh, okay, but you're miserable and you're having trouble, and you with your life, but you don't want to make any changes. God, I'm going to tell you, my sober date is November 13th, 1987, and I spent those 7 years in Alcoholics Anonymous. Never got a 30-day chip. I'm one of them relapse kings, and last time I picked up a chip in my old home group up in North Texas, nobody applauded. It was just, they were just done giving me aluminum, because I wasn't going to stay sober. And it was, part of my story, guys. And I want to share a little bit about that and then talk about some of my experience with doing this. Somebody sent me a quote one time, and the opposite of love isn't hate, it's indifference. And I'll get this out of the way right off the bat. Big Book talks, I think 27 places in the first 164 pages. It uses the word approach. And it's supposed to be some of old in here that have been around for a little bit. It's our responsibility to approach that newcomer and show them what this is about. And I get, if I talk on the podiums all these years, guys, I probably get more argument about that than anything. When they're ready to do the steps, they'll say so. They don't know. They don't have a clue. They're freaking out. They're scared to death. And oh, by the way, the clock's ticking. So we had a what we know today and what I know, thankfully, because of good sponsorship and surrounded by a bunch of great people in Alcoholics Anonymous, there's this little window of opportunity that we have when we set the bottle down. Then, depending on how far the illness has progressed, how many people have we seen that have stopped drinking and everything was great, and all the old timers making fun of them, they were just on a pink cloud. They are. It's called God's grace, and it's going to run out. It's just, we get to this comfortable spot, but if we don't do anything to get well, to recover, like the book is asking us to do, we're going to get in trouble. And when that obsession comes back, we're going to get drunk. I've never talked to anybody, and you can contradict me all you want to. I've never personally known anybody that I've been sponsoring that said, oh, I almost drank, but I remember to call my sponsor. It just doesn't happen, folks. They think about taking a drink and they go drink. And if you're having to stay sober, this just hanging on for dear life, one second at a time, you're not recovered. It's not okay. We got to help you get on some solid ground. Guys, the freedom that the book talks about, those 10-step promises about being placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected, guys, that's pretty good. I got to tell you, Patty and I, we got our birthdays in September. We always celebrate. We go down and see a bunch of AA folks in Las Vegas. And You know, I hear people all the time, oh, I can't believe you're talking about going to Las Vegas in recovery. Why not? I am a buffet whore. I'm just saying, I'm gonna hurt them boys. You pay $80 for a buffet, you're gonna hurt them. I'm just saying, I'm gonna get my money's worth. Come on, God, we just go and laugh our butts off and watch all the crazy people and just have a great time. I don't think about taking a drink anymore. I've recovered. And that happened 37 years ago. And I would do everything we can do to try to carry that message. Bill Wilson said in a letter in 1942, he said, our chief responsibility to the newcomer is an adequate presentation of the program. Now, listen, I can assure you that I'm down here in Kerrville, Texas. Some of y'all might have heard about that little flood we had down here. It was right out my front yard out here, right across the road is Guadalupe River. It got 32 feet out of its banks. And a lot of people got hurt. A lot of people lost a lot of stuff, guys. But it's a beautiful place to live. And I took my first drink right down there on the river and drank a bottle of Boone's Farm apple wine. January 1971, the year and the month that Bill Wilson passed away, I took my first drink. All the old hippies in here smiling. Y'all follow, yeah, all them little young, what's that? No, forget it. It tastes nasty. But anyway, but I had a successful period. I was some years and years. I was in the food business. I was years and years in it, drinking. I was in social. I was okay. No problems. I was holding it together pretty well until I wasn't. And then things started getting goofy. And, started making geographical cures. This is the Reader Digest condensed, guys. I bounced around the country and because I'm always thinking if it'll get better if I go someplace else. You know, if I date somebody else, it'll get better. If I buy it's just always something out there that's going to fix me in here. That ain't the case. But on one of my geographics, I moved back to Houston, Texas. I've been there a few times and loved Houston and married a little girl and had a barbecue restaurant and immediately drug her up to North Texas to be closer to my twin brother. Some of y'all know Myers, my twin. And he got a job at a big old country club and bought a little house. And life is good, guys. I came home one night real quick and I'd been drinking and doing some of those little outside issues. What was that stuff called, David? Cocaine. That was it. Cocaine. Everybody in the early 80s was doing cocaine. Don't look at me with disgust, guys. And I came home and had a pushing match with her, and I don't know what it was about, but she asked me to leave, and I came back a few hours later, and we had the talk. She said, if you want to stay sober, stay married to me, you're going to have to get sober, because I'm not going to play this game. And I looked her in the face with tears in my eyes and promised her I would. Yeah, I could have passed a lie detector, folks. There was nothing in me wanted to keep drinking. I'm done. I want to save this marriage. Week and a half later, I drank a beer with the boss. And came home and she smelled it and that was it. I thought I was good because I didn't come home drunk, but that wasn't my deal with her. My deal was I would not touch another drop. And I went to AA the next day. And I got to tell you, folks, don't ever misunderstand what I'm saying. They were the sweetest, nicest people you'd ever come across. Still are today. My best friends on earth are in Alcoholics Anonymous. It's just amazing. Love them. I spent the next 7 years in and out. She left and I just continued to go to meetings and I'd go to the meetings and we'd go in there and we'd, you know, well, who's a newcomer? And I'd raise a hand and everybody go around the room and tell me how they got here and more scary stories. That's going to help me. I know some sooner or later, you're going to tell one that's going to scare me into recovery. It's never happened on the faith ever. Don't get me started. I got to tell you this, and I'm going to talk about sponsorship. I have a vivid memory. I've talked about it a lot lately, but I have a vivid memory of this club up in North Texas and a big gravel parking lot outside. And we did the Lord's Prayer afterwards. Keep coming back. Work it, work it. And then we all went out on the front porch, everybody smoking and talking about where they're going to go to dinner. It's 7, 8 o'clock at night, and I'm there by myself. And everybody leaves, and pretty soon I'm the only one standing in the parking lot. I go over and lean on my truck. Guy comes out, waves, and turns the lights out in the parking lot. And I get in my truck and drive to the grocery store and buy me a 12-pack of beer. If you can stop drinking because you want to, folks, you're what they call a hard drinker. Bop to your drop. AA's full of them. The real alcoholic, guys, that obsession comes and we're in trouble. I can't remember the consequences of a week or a month ago, like the book talks about. And I kept relapsing. 1987, I tried to commit suicide. I'm on 7 prescription medications a day. I've got a psychiatrist. I'm doing everything. I'm an IOP. I'm doing everything anybody's asking me to do. I have never worked the 12 steps. I don't own a big book. Never had a sponsor. Nobody ever asked. I don't know what that is. We don't talk about sponsorship and stuff in meetings. Back then, we're talking about the next guy's problem. So anyway, I ended up at a group. It was different. A little girl stopped me from leaving, and I'm running late, and I just got there just in time, and the chairperson went around the room, and they all shared some hope with me about how their life had changed. The topic that night was, I'll never forget, how did your life change as a result of working the steps? And of course, I don't have anything to share because I've never worked the steps, but a bunch of people did, guys, and they talked about getting cars and going back to school and raising families and doing all the starting little businesses, and life. Oh, I wish I'd gone to that meeting 7 years earlier. I didn't. At the end of that meeting, these two old guys got hold of me and they stopped me. They're supposed to go home and go to dinner. It was at 7 o'clock at night and it's time for them to go home. And they stayed with me after this old Texan guy. And he said, why don't you sit with us? And let's help you figure out why you can't stay sober. And they discovered that I didn't have a big book and they got me a big book. And then they opened the pages and they showed me a couple of pages in the first 43 pages, and the doctor's opinion about the physical craving and the mental obsession over and more about alcoholism. And they talked about this little thing called a spiritual malady. And I went home that night with a clear understanding for the first time that I was an alcoholic. Guys, I'd call myself an alcoholic for years. I didn't even more believe it than the man in the moon because I can't relate to your scary stories. I'm the guy that's never been late for work ever. Like ever. I got a work ethic I'm not doing a lot of the crazy stuff you guys do, robbing liquor stores and shooting people and all that. I taking your clothes off in public. I did once, but everybody gets once, but what the heck? These guys got hold of me. After the deal, they said, Chris, come in the morning and we're going to show you how to make a pot of coffee and we're going to get you through this work quick. We got you a sponsor all picked out and we're going to help you get through this work. And the next morning after a meeting, we went to a back room and did a third step prayer. I got up and went to lunch. They bought me a plate of Mexican food and came back and gave me a notebook, showed me how to write a 4-step. Day 2. Just like the old timers did it. Guys, if any of you ever get a chance to read Earl Teague's story in the back of the big book. And it talks about working these steps in an afternoon. In the early guys, nobody took this long, drawn out period of time. I've got a world of time, guys. I'm still learning stuff. I was in a big book study Monday night and some little guy was sharing and I'm looking and I said, that's not right. That's not in the book. Danged if it was, I'm still learning stuff. It's the best. But guys, early on, it's triage. We've got to get these newcomers to God quick. We don't have time to start on the title page and read. A lot of people disagree. I think it's great if you got time and you want to do that, that's fine. But you got to get them through the work quicker. Because if you start reading, it's going to take forever to get this work done. And that obsession comes back and they're going to be in trouble. Bill Wilson, there's a great article, The Dilemma of No Faith. There's one little paragraph in there. It talks about, though 300,000 did recover, this was in 1961. This was 10 years before he passed away. Though 300,000 did recover in the last 25 years, maybe 500,000 more have walked into our midst and then out again. Yet we can't well content ourselves with the view that all of these recovery failures were entirely the fault of the newcomers themselves. Perhaps a great many didn't receive the kind and amount of sponsorship they so sorely needed. We didn't communicate when we might have done so. So we AAs failed them. I love Bill Wilson. When you're ready, you'll get this. That's not true, guys. If you're ready and somebody can show you how, you can get well. I've never seen anybody not get sober by doing that. Yeah. And it's all about doing the work early on, guys. Bill Wilson talks about growing spiritually through work and self-sacrifice for others up in Bill's story. I mean, that's how we grow spiritually. You can go to church all you want to, pray till your hair falls out. I don't, whatever you want to do. Our job is to help newcomer by work and self-sacrifice for others. That's been my experience. Exactly what Bill Wilson said. We got to go help others. That's why we're supposed to talk that little newcomer into getting off his butt quick and going to help the newcomer as early as we can. Guys, I got to get it off my chest. I was talking to somebody earlier today, and she was living in Atlanta, and her sponsors told her that she can't sponsor anybody. She's not going to let her do her amends until she's 9 months sober, and she can't sponsor until she's a year sober. Okay. My book on page 129 says, in those first days of convalescence, nothing will show much help you stay sober is intensive work with other alcoholics. Guys, that's how we stay sober. Go help somebody. And if you can't sponsor, go make coffee. Go clean up that crap in the bathroom. It's just a mess. I don't know what it is about AA bathrooms. They're just pick. You drop it on the floor, pick it up. Or get you a little newcomer to come help you. I don't know. You might do them a favor if you do. Bill Wilson, Dr. Bob got together, you know, and 6 months sober, Bill's coming apart because a business deal went bad. He's in Akron. He comes out in that little famous quote, I knew I needed another alcoholic as much as that alcoholic could need me. Bill's sober 6 months because he's working with other alcoholics. And now he's in bad shape. And instead of thinking about, you know, he's thinking about maybe having a drink. And he thinks, no, I'm going to go find a drunk. And he makes a few phone calls. Henrietta Cyberling puts him in touch with Dr. Bob, who's too drunk to see him that day, but got to see him the next day. Dr. Bob said, I'm going to see him. I'm going to spend this time with Bill for this Wilson guy from New York. I'm going to spend, I'll give him 15, maybe 30 minutes. I mean, I heard, you know, historians talk about it. And they were together literally 6.5 hours sitting in Henry Ellis Iperling's gate lines. You know how it is when you get two drunks together and they've got the same experience. Oh, my God. And all of a sudden, it's like the besties. Yeah. Alcoholics Anonymous was born then. It's so clear. It's all about helping others. Bill Wilson said, something passed between us. Yeah. That's the love of AA. That was it. I think Bill Wilson talks about the sole purpose of the AA group, and that's to carry the message to the alcoholic who still suffers. I'll tell you one quick story, and I'm going to talk specifically about sponsorship. Up in I think it was Cleveland. I keep forgetting. It was up in that area. There was a guy named Larry Jewell who, it was about 1940. It was the year after the Big Book was published. And he was a mess. He was a bad, bad drunk. And his health was real bad. And the doctors suggested that he get out of the cold. And he had an opportunity to get a job in Houston, Texas. He was a newspaper guy. And he got it all lined up. And the AA members took up a collection and got him a train ticket and bought him a Big Book. And Larry Jewell read the Big Book on the way to Houston, where he got a job. He'd never been to a meeting. Certainly not 90 meetings in 90 days. I want to puke. Sorry. I always say it, guys. If I could click my finger and get rid of one thing in AA, it would be that bumper sticker. Stop. You're setting people up for failure. Wish I had a nickel. My years of working in the industry, how many people come up afterwards? I can't do AA. I can't go to a meeting every day. Well, no kidding. I couldn't either. Go to as many meetings as you can go to. How's that? High five. He never been to a meeting. He got there and started. He wrote four of the original little articles that AA made out of pamphlets. And he started carrying messages there in Houston, started meetings up in East Texas, back over to Austin. And some of his proteges came to Kerrville, Texas, right where I live. And all this one little guy that had never even been to a meeting, how many lives did he impact? He got out there and started helping people get sober, carrying the message of hope, which is the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. So again, I get asked the questions a lot of times. How long do you have to stay sober before you can start sponsoring? Guys, it's going to be different for everybody in that deal, but the book I just read in that field in those early days, that's going to help you stay sober. So I was lucky in the group I went to. These old guys got around me and they said, Chris, if somebody's stupid enough to ask you to sponsor them, you say yes. And then call me because your life's fixing to change. You know, and it was about 3 weeks later, a guy that was a cook, and he was another cook. And he was in a meeting and we kind of hit it off. And he said, man, do you think you could sponsor me? And I looked over his shoulder and my sponsor was back over there with his arms folded, looking at me like, don't do something stupid. And I said, well, yeah, I think I can. He gave me a little hot thunder. Like, it was a good deal, guys. Y'all follow, we had a lot in common. And I went and sat with him and we started to work and he got sober. I don't know where he is today, but I mean, how cool was that? I spent 7 years sitting on my butt in Alcoholics Anonymous meetings with my arm folded, waiting to be offended so I could leave. I'm just proof positive that meeting makers sometimes don't make it. I don't know. There's sponsorship, guys. It kind of goes on a little spectrum as far as my you know, observations go. They can be this really intellectual, ineffectual. And then down at this end, there's this dictator. Some of y'all may have sponsors like this. You got to do this and you got to do that. And you can't have a relationship. So you can't do this and you can't. Okay. I didn't have any of that. And the other end of the spectrum is this ineffectual. Okay. Well, I'll sponsor you. You betcha. Listen, we'll get together next week. Okay. I'll talk to you later. Bye-bye now. Like, really? I'm going to sit here, rock back and forth, and wait a week? No, I'm not. I'm going to go drink what I'm going to go do. We're not life coaches too, folks. So this sponsorship stuff over the years has kind of taken a deal. I'm not knocking life coaches. I've seen some out there that are absolutely great. They're trained professionals, licensed for heaven's sake. They do a great job helping people get their life back on track. That's not sponsorship. Sponsorship, your responsibility is explain Alcoholics Anonymous to them, show them, introduce them to some new people, some recovery people, and then teach them how to work the steps. Watch them grow. I see so many people get tangled up like that, trying to jam this stuff. Good sponsorship, folks. Those guys didn't spend any time. I'll just tell you, I was up in North Texas when these guys got hold of me. They didn't spend any time. When it came time for me to start a little business, I was really excited. I had a great opportunity. God opened some doors and I got some free equipment. I mean, it was amazing. I mean, once I kind of made a decision, I wanted to do something, but there was nobody in there telling you shouldn't make any decisions like that for the first year. Stop. Who made up with that? It's not in the big book. It says, be careful. Pay attention to what you're doing, early sobriety. Okay, didn't say don't make a decision. Let me be, guys, when I got sober, I had to make some decisions, guys. It was either that or go to jail. You know, I mean, my little life was all kind of knotted up. I had to do some things different. Thank God for that. They were sweethearts. They didn't tell me I couldn't date. They just said, pay attention, make recovery number one. I dated a girl in recovery. We were together long. It was just, guys, it all works out. I drink and drug because the spiritual malady is inside. Some of y'all that have heard me talk before, I use a little issue man, little logo, little thing I drew ages ago, little X's on the outside. Everybody wants to blame their relapse. I guarantee you, I can sit in here with talk to you guys, and some of y'all are sitting in here grinding your teeth right now. I relapsed because of the divorce. No, .. You didn't. You didn't. I got a divorce in recovery. I didn't have to relapse. The obsession never crossed my mind. Some sad days. Guys, nothing outside's going to get me loaded. I get me loaded. When I get spiritually connected, folks, the fear stays at bay. You know, the self-centeredness goes away a little bit. And I do better. I'm not saying we can't be affected by our life and our experiences growing up. That can all affect us. But if we do the work, we're going to get on some solid ground. Bill wrote tons about it. Dr. Bob wrote tons about it. And approach that newcomer because they don't know what the hell is going on. I can promise you that. There's a couple of things real quick. This idea about self-sacrifice and service, I know we're about sponsorship here too, but the real quick interjection, service is really important. And if you can't sponsor somebody, I know some of y'all are in meetings where maybe you'll see a newcomer once every 6 months. You know, you're just a bunch of old guys sitting around talking, and it's just, it's great. But you can't survive like that. You got to get you some stuff to do. There was a nice lady down the island where I used to work, and she'd decorate the club. That was her service. And every holiday change, she'd be decorating. She's going to be doing Thanksgiving right now down there. If I went to the AA club on Padre Island, she'd be decorating Halloween stuff. And it was just, we look forward to it. She did such a beautiful job. Thank you for spending a little bit of your time to make other people's life better. It was, makes me want to cry. It was first century Christianity, folks. That's what that was. Clean up your stuff and go help somebody. Just be of service where you can. Is it okay to fire a sponsor? How many of you believe it's okay to fire a sponsor? Raise your hand. If you don't like your sponsor, guys, you're not going to use that sponsor. If you're not going to use that sponsor, you're wasting your time. I hear people all the time say, "Oh, I don't want to get another sponsor. I don't want to hurt his feelings." Okay, but you're going to die if you don't. This is not personal. Guys, I have people fire me all the time. I work full time. I've got I travel a lot, speaking and stuff. There's a lot of times I'm just not available to, you know, get together for lunch, for heaven's sakes. You know, and some people want that. And they come up and say, "Chris, I don't think this is going to work out. I need somebody I can have some more face-to-face time with." Brother, I got you. Welcome. I hope you get somebody. Let me know if I can help you ever. And I'm not being sarcastic. You don't belong to me just because I'm sponsoring you. You're not my property. If they get mad, you know you've made the right decision. Who wants that kind of guy? I got to tell you. It's about the length of sobriety too, guys. I would rather have somebody that's a year sober, 6 months sober, that's all excited about the steps and his nose is in that book, all excited, than some grumpy old 30-year sober guy sitting in the corner taking shots at everybody. You know, no, thank you. I don't want anything that guy's got, you know, and that's his deal. I wonder, I just interject here. Any of you guys let me just say this, and I'll go back to that. But in my opinion, and there's nothing in their literature written about this, my experience for me, I think it's probably really wise for most of us to men sponsor men and women sponsor women. I know that there's people on this group right now of the opposite sex that are sponsoring the opposite. And I'm sure that's great. I have seen hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of disasters as a result of that. I'll be honest with you guys. I mean, I never knew a woman in the world that couldn't pull the wool over my eyes. All she got to do is start crying. "Dang it, don't worry about it. I'll do your 4-step for you. I'll take care of this. Don't worry." You know, I'm not the guy, you know. I got enough to do with my little guys. I got plenty of effort there. And just some things, I know I always think I know women. I don't. You know, you get in there and you start talking and it's just completely different world. So I just, free to disagree. But I think my old sponsor, Mark Houston, used to talk about spiritual warfare. It's that little voice in your head that tells you that you can't do something. Somebody comes up and asks you to sponsor, you know, you try to get a little newcomer to get busy with service. How can I help them? I can't even help myself. That self-pity, guys, kills more alcoholics than anything else. That's why Bill Wilson on page 62 says selfish and self-centeredness, that we think is the root of our problems, driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, and self-seeking. That self-pity, we step on the toes of our fellows and they retaliate. Self-pity kills so many of us. And that little warfare in there that tells me I can't help anybody. Guys, I can't tell you how many times I've let that drag me down. And, you know, if somebody comes up and asks you, say yes. If it's a good fit, like talk to them a little bit and see what you can do. I'm a big referral. Somebody asks me to sponsor them and I can't. I'm going to get them somebody else that day. I'm gonna make sure that they got somebody that they can call. I'm going to give them my number. I correspond and talk to lots of people out there. Guys, I'm just saying, you think you know who God's going to use to help you? You're probably wrong. I always tell this story, but it's just so much, it's the truth. I've seen it right after COVID hit, right before we closed the meetings down, and there was this little guy in a meeting, and we had a big old meeting here in Ingram, and a big old big book meeting. We studied the literature, and there was a little crazy looking kid, y'all know, just tattoos from head to foot, and he's got piercings, and every he just looks like a little space alien. I don't know what, just, and I'm looking and I'm looking. And I asked my wife, she's sitting next to me, she's in the program, and I says, "Is that little guy over there, is he looking at me?" And she said, "Oh yeah." Meeting's ending. I said, "Listen, I can't sponsor anybody else. I got a full boat. I'm too busy." She's, "Well, okay, tell him, because he's coming." You know, and we said the Lord's Prayer, and he's coming across like that song from Jaws, dun, 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 dun. He's pushing people out of the way, and he's coming in fast. And I look at Patty and I says, "Dadgummit, that's stupid of me. Of course, I'll talk to him. I'll, you know." And I turn around and stick my hand out like that, and he pushes his arm up on me and pushes me out of the way to get to this kid behind me who's got tattoos from head to toe, y'all follow, piercings all over his head. I've sponsored this kid for 8 months, you know, 6 months maybe. Yeah, this kid didn't want anything this old one-eyed guy had to say. He wanted what this kid back here said. I looked at Patty all, I thought what I said tonight was particularly good. I don't know, I've got my feelings hurt because the guy didn't want me to sponsor him. And I'm sitting there with tears in my eyes, watching him after the meeting. My little guys over there got him a big book, bought him a big book out of his own money, and set him down. And they're talking, and he's got a little highlighter. "Okay, listen, I want you to read these pages right now, okay, tonight, and then we're going to talk. But I want you to make sure you've got something to do, just like I did him 6-8 months ago." God, it's so cool, guys, to watch it. I look on the wall and Bill Wilson's, Dr. Bob's pictures, and because they didn't, yeah, I got to show you. I don't know if y'all can see this. Somebody sent this to me. Can y'all see this? So you see a picture of Bill Wilson, I'll read it. "Happy birthday, Bill W." He's got his birth date on there. "Thank you for not writing a gratitude list in the hotel lobby." I mean, I got a big picture of it on the wall in my AA club. I mean, guys, that's so good. There's nothing wrong with gratitude lists. Stop grinding your teeth. Bill Wilson was in trouble and he went and found another drunk to work with. That's what we do. That's the thing that's going to help you more than anything. It's just, yeah, spiritual warfare, folks. Stop listening to it. Just go out there and do what you're supposed to do. Stop listening to people that tell you that you're not sober long enough. You are. If you get in over your head, call me. Call some of the people on this group. That's how we learn, folks, by doing it. Yeah, I can promise you. I can send you enough stuff in Dropbox to make you, give you to read for a year on sponsorship stuff. What's our primary purpose? To carry the message to the newcomer, the alcoholic who still suffers. Okay. What's the message? The big book. So you got 164 pages, read it, know what that's about, and go teach that to the newcomer. I got to say two things real quick. Early on, back when I first got sober, they used to have this little thing called a circle triangle in the big book. And they took it out in the, I forget when it was, 92. Don't get me started. But anyway, they figured they couldn't, you know, copyright a symbol that had been around since the beginning of time, for heaven's sakes. And so they said, "You can continue to use it, but we're not going to put it in the literature anymore." And they stopped doing it. You can see a marked decline when they took that circle triangle out to with our success rates. Guys, if you look at the success rates in 1955, when our second edition was published, we had a success rate of 75% in the United States. I've talked to lots of historians, folks. It's true. Right now in the United States, it hovers around 10% staying sober of the people that come in. How many are staying? We've never had a problem ever getting people to come to Alcoholics Anonymous. We've got a bear getting them to stay. Because if all they're doing is sitting in a room listening to you talk about your trauma, they're not going to stay. They need that to get well, guys. They need to see that excitement. It's pretty cool, guys, to be free. I'm just saying. You know what I do after the meeting? I get my guys and we go out and you can talk about all of that stuff until the cows come home. Because I love you. And I want to hear it and I want to help any way I can. I got through that divorce with the people in Alcoholics Anonymous. There was a 9-year-old stepson involved in that. And I thought I was going to die. But I didn't sit in a meeting and talk about it. I talked it with my friends, the people that knew me. And still do today. Ain't nothing like a bunch of guys in recovery going to eat breakfast together. Oh, it's amazing. Yeah. I'm just saying. I think for those that are interested, there was a study done in, I think it was 2001. There's done a couple of studies. This was a study done up in Baltimore, Maryland, about sponsorship. And they tested a bunch of people. They asked questions. They surveyed a bunch of folks in recovery at Alcoholics Anonymous. Of the people that had sponsors, there was a marked improvement in their sobriety, the length of sobriety that they were attaining versus the people that didn't have sponsors. Of the people that were sponsoring, it was way above all of that. It's by giving that we get to get, folks. That's what they were talking about nonstop. It's just something you can't. I wish we had more people doing it. There was an article out there called "How Fast Should a Newcomer Be Taken Through the Steps?" It's just a great short little article. It talks about Earl T that we just talked about in Chicago, but talks about the original 6 steps and how Dr. Bob and these guys worked these people through so fast back in the day when success rates were through the ceiling. And I'll put my email in the chat. And you guys, I can send it to you. One of the things I use a lot, and I will send it to anybody. It may take me because I'm vacationing for 2 days. I won't be near a computer. But I did a little quick first step. I cherry picked the first step. The steps are outlined in the first, 101 pages. And 60 of those are the first step. That's why it drives me crazy when the people that just read, it just takes forever to read that if you're going to do it for an hour after a meeting or something. But to cherry pick them, you can sit down. When those guys stopped me after that meeting and sat me down, we weren't on that back porch 30 minutes. And they showed me the physical craving and the mental obsession. And they asked me the questions on page 43, on top of page 44, asked me the questions. When I drink, do I drink too much? And when I don't want to drink, can I not drink? No. Y'all got it? I'm an alcoholic. And I was convinced. Once you're convinced you're an alcoholic, you're done. You'll get this. You'll stay sober. The people that we hurt in alcohol, in AA, in all forms or fashion, the people that we allow to sit in there confused. I just got to make sure they understand what they are and help them get in the right room if they're not an alcoholic, for heaven's sakes. Lots of 258 different 12-step fellowships out there now using the 12 steps. It's our job to help them. But anyway, all that to say, guys, I'll send it to you, that little quick guide. You could use it and you could change it up any way you want. But it's just the key things in those 60 pages to try to help them understand, keep their attention. You might be surprised. Some of these little alcoholics, brand new, they have a very short attention span. Some of them little meth heads too. So we can help anybody with that. But I'll be more than glad to send it to you. So I got Bill Wilson had one of his favorite authors was William James. Some of y'all, if you ever read Varieties of the Religious Experience, yeah, it's not a page turner, folks. It's a hard read. It's not something you're going to go out by the pool and read. It's tough, but it's beautifully written. And he was a brilliant guy. One of his lines in there caught me. Act as if what you do makes a difference. Why? Because it does. Thank y'all, guys. Y'all are good.
Oh, that was awesome. Thank you, Chris. I'm going to let's see, I'm gonna set everybody, allow people to unmute and come in. Well, Chris, so much. Feel free to unmute and say thanks.
Thank you, Chris.
Thank you, Chris.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you,
Thank you so much,
Chris.
Chris.
Thanks, Chris.
Thank you
So
so
good
much,
to see you again,
Chris.
brother.
Thank you, Chris.
Thank you, Chris. Thank you, Chris.
Thank you
Thanks,
so
Chris.
much.
Much.
Thanks, Chris.
Always a pleasure. Great job.
Lovely to see
Thank
you.
All right, we've got quite a few. We got quite a few questions that have come in. We're going to give Chris a little bit of a break. I'm going to put a QR code up here. The seventh tradition states that every group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their inner group, central office, local services, district, area, and general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose to help the other alcoholic who still suffers. Simple Actions is a home group. If you're interested in joining a home group or in need of a sponsor, please hang out after the meeting. Home group members, please raise your hands, either virtually or physically. Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. If you have questions or would like additional information about sponsorship, several of us will be hanging out here after we close the meeting. Please feel free to talk to me or anyone else. If you're a little bit shy or a little bit high or a little bit fly, you can send an email to info@simpleactions.com. All right, so let's see. We got a good amount of questions coming through. Yeah, keep them coming to the user questions. We got quite a few stacked up. Yeah, Chris, I was wondering, was it sponsorship direction that made you the chairman of the cleanup committee when you were in early sobriety?
I'm afraid so. Yeah. It was several. It was a group thing. A lot of people ganged up on me that night, and asked me to go to my first group conscience, and I went. They wanted to nominate me. They said that we want to nominate you for chairman of the cleanup committee. And I was so bummed. I said, I'm not remotely interested. Okay, but they figured since I was in the food business, I could clean the kitchen, and I could. And the next Wednesday, I went to the meeting anyway, and I wasn't in that meeting 10 minutes, and they had voted me in as the chairman. After the meeting, I asked him, I said, well, listen, I was mad. I looked at that guy, and he had that grin on his face, like, we got you, buddy. And and I said, listen, if I'm going to be the chairman of this thing, I need a list of the other committee members so we can organize a cleaning rotation. Yeah. And he spit coffee clear across the kitchen. He did. He laughing his ass off. He said, no. He said, Chris, there's no committee. You're the janitor at this group. And I was like, God, I thought I was going to get an office, you know, maybe some, you know. He opened the door and says, here, meet Mr. Hoover. And it showed me where the cleaning supplies were, gave me the keys. But the rest of the story, David set me up. I got to tell you, I stayed away for a couple of days to punish him. And then on a Friday, my brother let me off early at work. And I went in there and locked myself in that club at about 1 o'clock. And I cleaned that club like a big boy. I mean, cleaned it. And waxed the floors, set the chairs up, cleaned all the brown stuff out of those coffee pots. I mean, nasty bathrooms, everything was done. And 5:30, I got coffee made, and I'm sitting in the meeting hall ready to go. And this little lady walked in, and I didn't even see her and knew it was because you could hear her on linoleum. She was about 2 feet tall, and just 140 years old. She looked like a little question mark, and she's sliding in that meeting, and she's squealing in the kitchen. And she looked around the door, and she said, did you clean this place? I said, yes, ma'am. I'm a little soaking wet through the loom t-shirt. And it was just me and her in the meeting. And I said, yeah. She came up behind me and got a little bony arm around my neck and gave me a little back hug. And she said, boy, we need you here. I'll never forget it, ever. I didn't try to commit suicide 2 weeks earlier, 3 weeks earlier, because I was drunk. I tried to commit suicide because I felt absolutely useless. And this lady told me, in a less than a month of sobriety, that the group needed me. Dude, I owe her my life. I just do. Yeah. That's what it's about, folks.
Thank you, Chris, that was selfish of me. I needed a good cry. I always cry when you tell me.
Every time I tell it, I cry. Every time.
It's one of my favorites. I was in a meeting the other day. We were reading some of the history, and a guy shared. He said, "You know, these guys used to go to hospitals and stuff and look for drugs. We don't have to do that anymore." And I thought, "Oh my God, he's gonna clean this up somehow." And he just doubled down on it. He talked for several minutes about not having to go look for people anymore because they come to us. Sorry, I don't have a point there. How do you know if you have a sponsor who has strong sobriety?
I always laugh about it. You know, we spend longer shopping for a toaster than we do looking for a sponsor. It's not something that you've got to do overnight. But I mean, if you're sitting in a meeting, watch them, pay attention to them. I ask them. I ask my guys, listen, you go to, if you're looking for a sponsor, ever look, go ask them, have you had a spiritual experience as a result of working the steps? They'll do two things. They'll run so far away from you, it's not even funny. Oh, let's not get too spiritual. You don't want that guy. Or they'll look around, hug your neck, say, "Where did you hear that? You know, come on over here." And you got you one. Just, you can tell. Are they happy? Are they looking like they give a poot? Yeah, snag them. Have they got the time to spend with you? But you'll know that. You'll see it. You know, rumor travels fast in Alcoholics Anonymous, folks. People tell you the good ones and the bad ones. So, you know, get in there. Yeah.
That's a legit question, isn't it, Chris? Have you had a spiritual awakening as the result of the 12 steps?
Why would I want anybody to work with me that's not interested in showing me how to 12 to have a spiritual experience? Guys, listen, this is not religion, but Alcoholics Anonymous is it's without question about a spiritual experience, unapologetically about God. And if I've got somebody up there tiptoeing around that, then I don't want them. That's just me, guys. I hear people all the time, "Well, I want a businessman that understands. Well, I want a woman. I want one that has kids so she understands." Those are considerations if that's what you want. I'm more concerned with what's going on in their little heart. You know, have they got the time to spend with you? Because it takes a little time, especially around the fourth step. So there you go.
Somebody wants to know, do you have any words of encouragement for AAs who are just getting started working with others, maybe lack a little confidence?
Yeah, it's scary. And just say right now, all of us, you're going to make mistakes. You know, it's just, you hear the old timer sometimes, you know, "Oh, you don't want to hurt anybody." You're not going to. If you're coming out of the big book and you're trying to show them that, you're not going to hurt them. But you can't. It just takes a little effort, a little practice. I'm going to repeat this. I said it earlier. Look at the archive stuff. I can send you history sites out there that talk about it. It's just, you know, nobody in the early days of Alcoholics Anonymous, guys, nobody took longer than a short period of time, a few days, a few weeks, to get somebody completely through the steps. There was none of this 90 days, a year stuff. I'm speechless. Just the clock's ticking. I don't know. David, when did you have your spiritual experience? How long were you sober before you had a spiritual experience?
Oh, I don't know, man. The obsession to drink left pretty early. I started feeling better about my life and the people that were, you know, it just kind of, I don't know when it was, but I know that it was. I'm a different man.
I had a completed fourth step. I was 2 weeks in. I had a completed fourth step, ready to do a fifth step. And I realized that the obsession had gone. And sometimes it's when people start their amends, and sometimes it's different for some people after a third step prayer. It's when the change starts happening, you know, but it's different.
To your point earlier, you look at Bill on page 14 has a white light spiritual experience. And on page 15, he's suffering from waves of self-pity and resentment. Yeah. Right. He had the experience, but we need to stay busy, right?
That's what it is. I can't live off a spiritual experience I had 37 years ago. I got to have current. I got to stay current with this work. I want a new experience. And that's what it's about. is to try to get them through this work as quick as possible so they can have their very own little spiritual experience. Yeah.
I have one. What do you do for a sponsee who is in an emotionally abusive relationship and won't leave and is having suicidal ideation other than give resources for help? How can you create boundaries?
I would get resources. And as an alcoholic, you know, getting faced with some of this, I mean, I've got them. I've got numbers that I can call. There's not too many questions that somebody can ask me that I don't know one of y'all that I can call who's been through it. It drives me crazy sometimes in Alcoholics Anonymous when people want to talk about stuff they know nothing about. Well, I've never suffered from trauma, but no, be quiet. We've got to get you to somebody that understands what the heck you're going through. And we can try to do that.
Are you suggesting that a sponsor should say, I don't have experience with that? I don't know what to do.
I'm saying that would be the mature, spiritually connected individual to say that. And because that's what the whole deal, that's what the fellowship is about. You do that circle triangle we were talking about, guys, recovery is the 12 steps, unity. The fellowship was that's what we are in here. Listen to you guys when I came on. You can see these Zooms, you know, some they're all a bunch of grumpy people sitting around, nobody's talking. And then we get on there with you guys in a really cool little meeting. Everybody's laughing and talking crap about, you know, just having a great time. That's the fellowship, guys. Come be a part of that. Let's turn your camera on and get in there and jump in with both. Yes. And then service. If you're doing in all three parts there, you can't not stay sober. You're gonna. So the sooner I can get this guy through the work and start, you know, our group conscience is on Wednesday night in our little board meeting. We have a group conscience. And then afterward, we at the group conscience, we do service. Who's going to make coffee next month? Who's going to chair the meetings next month? You know, who's going to be the greeter next month, the cleanup guy? You know, everybody gets a chance. All the little new guys coming out of treatment, they get a chance to do something. It makes all the difference in the world. Those that participate, stay. Those that don't, they go away. I'm so glad that I didn't have an old guy sitting around telling me, you're not sober long enough to empty the trash. Oh, God.
Do you think people are kind of shy away or are tender around taking the leap towards helping other people because they think they have to know how to be a life coach and a trauma counselor and all that stuff? I mean,
without question. But we teach what we're taught. Where did they hear that? If somebody's telling them and putting in their head, well, you're not ready until you literally, guys, I had a nice old guy. I was doing a workshop in a sponsorship deal up in New Orleans one time. And this big old mountain of a guy comes up. He says, listen, I appreciate you coming over here, but you need to know this. We don't let anybody in New Orleans sponsor till they're 5 years sober. Well, I happen to know a bunch of people living in New Orleans, and I know that's not true, but you know where this guy's coming from. And it's like, buddy, how many people are you killed with that advice? That's ridiculous. The book just said, that's how we grow spiritually, through work and self-sacrifice for others. Got to go help somebody. So each of us find our own little niche, but yeah, anything that slows any of us down, I'm against. I've seen it.
I got one here. Have you found the plain language big book helpful for new AAs who can't read well at first?
I'm having some computer problems. I'm going to freeze that. I'm just kidding. I've seen it. What I've read of it, it's an interesting little piece of literature. We don't use it at our group because if we're coming out of the literature, if all the page numbers don't line up, I wish they had done a little better job of lining the pages up. It could have been a more useful way to do this. Bill Wilson wrote some wonderful stuff, and we're not going to get to read them because we've simplified it, you know. But they it wasn't near as bad as I thought it was going to be. So you know. If it helps, get it. I've known a lot of people in my years who have learned to read by reading the big book. So I'm just saying, you know, we can go a little slower, but that's why I want to cherry pick the steps. I want to work them through. It's not just read the pages and stuff. I just, let's get them doing the work, and I can show them. There's another little thing I can show you, the page numbers where the steps are, the amends process, steps 8 and 9, is page what, 67 to 80 something, you know. It's just those, I just made those up, but it'll show you in that little guide, and you just get them to read those pages. It doesn't have to be all at once. It'll help.
How do you work with someone who insists on still smoking weed or using other drugs and staying California sober, as they say? I don't know.
Yeah. I try to be real, real kind about it. Cause I believe that everybody gets their own path. If you're on medications, and I'm not against medications, if you're on Suboxone or smoking pot, if you're willing to get off the stuff, I'll start helping you. If you want to stay on it, there's fellowships out there specifically for people on those meds, on pot. If you can do that, it's the same with benzos. It's difficult. I heard a old AA guy once said it one time. He says, if your spiritual experience can come from a pill, why do you need God? You know, if that's, I'm just not going to play. But I'm not going to take time to sponsor, because, buddy, my time's pretty limited, and I want to sponsor the people that I can help the most, and I really can't. I've never sponsored anybody that smoked pot on a regular basis that stayed sober. You know, same area of the brain is affected. It triggers the cycle there. And I mean, you know, I don't know. Marijuana Anonymous was, you know, one of the first ones out there that got the 12 steps too. So you might try them. Might help.
And what I thought I heard you say, the tipping point was if they had a desire, like, hey man, I'm on this stuff. I want to get off everything. Will you work with me? It's like, hey, brother, thanks for telling me the truth. I got you. Let's go. You know,
exactly.
Okay. Yeah.
Because I will. I'll bend over backwards to try to help that if they're going to do it. Because you can't just stop taking benzos or Suboxone or methadone. You can't. You could die that way. I'm not even suggesting. But if we could start a slow taper. You know, all of my guys that I sponsor, I end up making sure that we have a visit with their doctor so the doctor knows what the heck's going on. They're in recovery now. That means they can't get certain medications anymore that they were possibly taking. So, and it's up to them what they want to do, but I'll help any way I can.
Thank you. All right. I'm just going to read this verbatim. You mentioned that the timing of when you start sponsoring is different for everyone. Do you think there should be a certain step we have reached before we start to sponsor? Oh, okay. Yeah. How far through the steps do I need to be to start to sponsor, I suppose?
You can't teach what you haven't done if you have no experience with it. If you've never done a four step, you can't teach somebody how to do a four step. It's just, you know, I don't care. You can talk about it all you want to, but until you have that experience of seeing your truth in that fourth column and understanding how to lay it out, you can't teach it. So, but it still starts with sponsorship. It's my job is to get them through that work as quick as possible so that they can turn around and start doing the same thing. And if they get in over their head, we can sit and have, you know, a little meeting, and, you know, I can help them any way I possibly can, but I want to get them as quick as possible. And you'll catch a lot of resistance. There'll be a lot of people that just defiant, just no, absolutely not. I know people that have been sober forever that still can't teach because they never worked the steps. It's just not good.
I think you've already said there's no one size fits all, but somebody wants to know, how frequently do you recommend meeting with your sponsees?
It's early on. It's pretty labor intensive. Thank God for cell phones now. You know, back when I got sober, there wasn't, and you'd go forever and not see them, talk to them. But I want the little guys that I sponsor to go to meetings that I go to, at least we got two a week. And so I want them to at least try to do that. And because I want to lay eyes on them. They can say all they want on the phone and, you know, sound okay, but I can look across the room. I'm just like my mama, you know, she could watch me walk across the living room and say, what's wrong? You know, and it's nothing. I didn't say nothing. She knows that intuitiveness. And I love it. But yeah, I wanted to stick close, and we're on the phone on a regular basis. I am not one of those dogmatic, you got to call me every day. I would like you to call on a regular basis. Okay. And if you got any questions, hardest thing is to get them to understand when I say I want you to call, I want you to call. But you're busy. I know I'm busy. Make it quick. And if you're going to call me after 9 o'clock at night, you better be bleeding. My sponsor, he used to ask me, he says, Chris, did you have this problem at 6 o'clock? Yes. Why didn't you call me at 6 o'clock? Because it just sounds better at 10 o'clock. So go quick. My deal is today still. If you call me on my phone, I got it. You leave me a message, I will always call you back. Always. It's just that simple. So, yeah.
All right, here's a tasty one. And I think it goes to qualification, like if you're convinced he's a real alcoholic. But the question reads, would you ever tell someone this isn't the program for them? If so, how do you approach that conversation?
If you can't, the top of page 44 in chapter agnostics, this is another thing that I would have done different. I'm going to talk to Bill Wilson one day when I croak. I'm going to go talk to him first right off the bat. And I'm going to ask him why he put the qualifying questions for first step in a chapter called We Agnostics. I mean, who's going to look for it there? You know, I would have done it a little bit different. If when you honestly want to, you find you cannot quit entirely, power of choice. Or if when drinking, you have little control over the amount you take, you're probably alcoholic. And I ask him those two questions. It's real simple. I don't have to read. We don't have to talk about all the war stories and all this. I'm just asking him about those two words right there, control and choice. And we can, and most of them are. The deal is so many people, we don't talk about the progression. There's long periods of time, guys, where I held it together pretty good. I sponsored a sea of old guys who drank successfully for 30 or 40 years, never had any real, real problem. And then towards the end of our lives, wheels started coming off and it started turning into a shit show. But even then they could look back and see, was there times when you started to drink and you drank more than you intended? Well, yeah. Okay. All right. Well, given sufficient reason, has this really affected your life adversely? Has it ever caused you problems? Yeah. So why do you keep drinking? Well, maybe you're an alcoholic. Well, maybe I am. Yeah. You don't have to look at the war stories. I get people, there's little guests out there. AA does a deal too. I think it's 20 questions. And I saw one the other day, 44 questions that you ask alcoholics. The qualifying questions are the two questions I just read. You don't have to have a drunk driving charge. That's why I hate to go to meetings where all they do is tell war stories. Drives me crazy. And that nice lady sitting on the front that just had a drunk driving charge, y'all follow? And she's up there with her $700 Louboutin bag in her lap, listening to you talk about eating out of a dumpster. I'm sorry. She ain't coming back. She thinks that that's what she has to do in order to, no, we don't have, no. So we will eventually all do crazy stuff. We will eventually die from this disease. But you could have diagnosed me at 18 years old had you known the questions to ask me. And nobody did. They're just looking at the drama. So that's what I try to help the guys see. Let's just concrete. It's amazing how many times you can do that.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
What if you're standing in front of somebody who you don't think is an alcoholic, but based on those terms, and maybe they need to be in a different room? How do you approach that conversation gently?
If they're little drug addicts, then I try to get them connected to Drug Addicts Anonymous, some of these other little fellowships that they can help them. Identification is real important, folks. It is. That's when those stories important, alcoholics and drug addicts on a one-to-one basis. It's extremely important. I hear people all the time, it's all the same thing. It's not. If you think it's the same thing, listen to an alcoholic's fifth step on Wednesday. And then Friday night, listen to a little crackhead's fifth step. Yeah. It's a completely different world. Just saying. The solution is going to be the same, but unless they can believe that you understand where they're coming from, yeah. I'm not. I've sponsored people that were not alcoholics. I've sponsored people in Al-Anon that just wanted to do the work, and they were tired of going slow, and they wanted to do it fast. I got the time. I'd be more than glad to help them any way I can. But I don't want them sponsoring somebody if they don't understand what this is about.
Particularly alcoholics.
Because they're the ones that think it'll be okay to have non-alcoholic beer that's loaded with alcohol. It's scary.
Now, you talked about it being okay to fire your sponsor. What about firing a sponsee if they don't want to do what's suggested or they aren't being honest? Is there a time where you cut somebody loose?
I generally don't. I make a suggestion. It sounds like this. David, we've been talking about this for a while. You seem to be a little reluctant to do this work. And I mean, would there be somebody else that you would rather work with? I'll be more than glad to help you get somebody that you're more comfortable with, if that's the case. And they'll come back, well, thank you. Yeah, I think maybe so. Or they'll come back with, you know, no, I can get them off dead center. I fired a guy one time. I said, buddy, I'm done with you. I'm just tired of all the constant runaround. And about 6 months later, he died. And I kind of made a deal with myself. I wasn't going to do that anymore.
Same exact experience.
I fired one guy,
went to his funeral.
Yeah. I'm not going to waste my time with somebody that obviously doesn't want to do the work. So we'll continue to bring it to the forefront of the conversation. I mean, I let them know first meeting what we're going to do. We're going to get through this work quick. And it's frustrating because they go to different meetings and they've got the old guy in the corner telling people to slow down. This is not a race. And I'm saying, speed up. It is a race. So they get confused. And I take them back to the book and we try to get clear. And it works pretty well most times.
When you say cherry pick, and you've already put us on the first paragraph of We Agnostics and for the diagnostic criteria, the question is, could you give us a quick breakdown of what pages what's your go-to when you're cherry picking the problem?
I don't have it in front of me, that little sheet, but it's in the doctor's opinion, he does such a wonderful job. Dr. Silkworth was an amazing guy. And he does such a wonderful job explaining the phenomenon of craving. And he talks specifically about the need for the psychic change. But he does it just a great, but we don't have to start on the title page and start reading when we do that. It's just, you can just point out the paragraphs specifically. The paragraph that changed my life is on top of page 24, where Bill Wilson says, it's in the chapter of the Agnostics, where Bill Wilson says, in italics, the fact is that most alcoholics, for reasons yet obscure, have lost the power of choice and drink. Our so-called willpower becomes practically non-existent. We are unable at certain times, great caveat, to bring into our consciousness with sufficient force the memory and suffering and humiliation of even a week or a month ago. We are without defense against the first drink. Guys, I got lots of choices, but around alcohol, I do not have a choice. I talked to a guy this week that had 11 years of sobriety and lost it. He said, well, I chose to pick up a drink. You didn't. You chose to stop doing the work and the obsession came back and you got loaded. You see the difference? We make choices, but whether to pick up a drink or not. If your head's telling you it's time to pick up a drink, let's get this work done. It's always a first step experience, folks. It's always about the first step. If my car breaks down, I got to find out what's wrong with it before I can fix it. Did you get it? And I'll say this, if I have a flat tire in the rain, that rain is going to make it tougher to fix, but it didn't cause the flat tire. And that's why as a sponsor, I don't want to get sucked into this deal of talking about all of this external stuff, your relationships, your finances, your job, your this, your that. Guys, if I've got some experience, I'll share a little with you, but that's not what my job is, to help you stay focused on this. See if you're helping somebody. Got that? Yeah. It's fun watching the expressions. Some of you are like this. I'm going to kill him. Okay.
I've got one question left, so I'll offer a last call to the user questions. What do you do when sponsees start to slow down and start drifting? Not quite sure what's meant by that, but I can kind of imagine. Sponsees losing momentum.
Yeah, that's why I like to see my little sponsee. I lost my sponsor last year, end of last year. Gary Brown was my sponsor up in Indianapolis forever. And he was the last little guy in our little sponsorship lineage that goes straight back to Bill and Dr. Bob. And I made a deal ages ago. I said, I'm going to try to find somebody local to sponsor because I really want that personal one-on-one accountability. I want to sit across the table and talk to somebody in private. And, you know, Don, Gary and I couldn't do that over the phone, you know, especially the last years of his life. And so it's the same stuff. If I'm sitting in a meeting and I see somebody sliding off, they're slacking up, they're not volunteering for any of the committees that we do or any of the jobs, whatever, I'm going to have to talk. What are you doing? I mean, that's the accountability. Where are you at with service? When we do the circle triangle, it's this. Where are you at in the steps? Well, I'm still making my amends. Okay, that's good. All right. Where you got your home group? Did you go to group conscience last month? Well, yeah, you were there. I'm just checking, bud. Just asking. Look over there in service. How many people are you sponsoring? I got three guys. You had three guys last time we talked about this. Okay. You still good? All right. I'll pick up another one. Well, you don't have to, but stay focused. We reel them back in because we can all drift, folks. Every one of us. We get busy with work. We get busy with family. I know some of y'all have got kids, and it's just like there's periods of my life that I couldn't devote as much time. I had to work two jobs early on just to, so I could make some amends, and I didn't have time to go to as many meetings and stuff. But I had a sponsor that was holding me accountable, making sure I was okay, and that's what we do. I'm grateful that I've got people around me that hold me accountable, and I love them. I'm blessed to have them.
All right. We are blessed to have this time with you, my friend, tonight. That is all of our questions. Do you have a burning desire, Chris? Anything we didn't cover?
No. I would say this, and I did put my little email in there if you guys want to snag it, if you ever need anything. Sometimes, you know, you work in the treatment business, and you work around a bunch of people who are dealing with nonstop trauma, nonstop, just the damage that our lives are around the drugs and alcohol and stuff. And we get out and we get sober. I'm hesitant to say it, but it's something we touched on earlier. It's not okay to be miserable. You know, all of us are going to have little down times, but I'll say, I just watch a lot of people in AA. They just get weighted all down. And well, you know, I'm okay, but I hate my job, and I'm in a relationship that I don't like. And you know, you can only do that so long, folks. At a certain point, you got to be fulfilled. At a certain point, you got to be happy, and you got to be the person you're supposed to be. Because I've seen so much of it here lately. When my insides don't match my outsides, there's going to be conflict. And I can be working the steps, guys, and just be miserable, because I'm not taking care of myself. And that's why it's so important to make sure you got people around you, some good peeps that, you know, they can help you on that deal. And there's some great literature out there about self-pity. Again, Bill Wilson wrote a bunch about it. It's just can't do it, folks. Get happy. You know, I was in a meeting not long ago, and an old guy sitting in the corner is just, you know, there's nothing in this book about being happy. Yeah, obviously you haven't read it. Because there's a whole bunch of stuff in that book about being happy. Happy, joyous, and free, I think, is a quote out of there, but I could be wrong. But, man, if you ever need anybody to visit with, call me. Holler at me. Thanks, guys. Thanks for letting me come on.
Thank you, Chris. That's awesome.
I'm sober, damn it.
Look at that. We got some big hands there.
Mr. Morgan, can I prevail upon you to read a vision for you, and then we'll pray and continue chatting.
Absolutely. I'm Morgan. I'm an alcoholic. This is a vision for you from Big Book, page 164. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come. if your own house is in order, but obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.
Thank you, Morgan. Thank you all so much. Make sure everybody has, everybody can unmute. Let's virtually circle up and feel free to unmute as you see fit. And we'll close with the Lord's Prayer. And feel free to thank our Father.
Our Father,
Forever,
coming back. Works if you work it.
Thank you, Chris.
Thanks, Chris.
Thank you, Chris.
Come again.
Thank you, Chris.
Thank you, Chris.
That'll be good.
Language of the heart. Love it.
God bless you. I'll be checking back on.
Thank you.
Seeing you guys.